We're at Catherine Narducci's studio here at a home. This is a separate room in her home, and this is her studio where she does all the paintings. Now, for those of you who don't know, Catherine is a great, great painter and a great artist, but she's also one hell of an actor. And Catherine and I met on Bronx Tale, and I know you must have said this story 100 times, Catherine, probably 1,000 times. But just for the people who don't know and haven't seen the show, haven't seen certain things that you've done, the first thing you ever done, tell them how it happened.
Okay, so I'm going to make a long story short.
Well, it's okay. We got a little time.
Okay. So I was working in the Hunts Point Terminal Market, and I was a closet case actress at the same time. I would buy backstage and go on auditions, and nobody knew. So I was working in the Hunts Point Terminal Market, and the woman, Annabelle, who I worked with, I would always make everybody in the office laugh, and she used to go, ha ha, you should be an actress. She did not know that I was acting, going on secret auditions. So one day she comes in with the Daily News, and she said, look at this. Robert De Niro is looking for a little boy to play his son. It's an open call. You should take your son. And I said, oh, my God, yeah, I'm going to. I went home. I asked my son, do you want to go in for Robert De Niro? He's doing a movie. I just took him on, not knowing anything, to the address that was there. I took my 9-year-old son, and he said yes. And he stayed home from school that day. I took him to the audition, and he went in, and he did his thing. While he was in the audition, I saw all these women coming in that look like me, walk like me, and talk like me. And I was like, well, what are you here for? Because I could do it. By the way they look, I'm right for whatever this role is.
Right.
So I said to this girl, who are you here for? And she said, I'm here for the mom. And I didn't know that it was the mom, Robert De Niro's wife. I did not know. So when she came out with my son, I said, could I read for the mom? And she said, are you an actress? I said, not really, but trying to be. And she said, no, honey, you have to be in SAG. The little boy is an open call. The mom isn't. But if we don't find the mom today, call in the morning. We're going to make it an open call tomorrow.
Wow. Okay.
So I said, fine. I took my son. We went home. I was getting dressed for work to go to the Hunts Point Terminal Market. And I was debating all morning whether to call. And I decided I'm going to call. So I called up. I said, hey, I was there yesterday. Did you ever find the mom? She said, no. I said, can I come in? She said, yeah, come back. I went back, I put myself on tape, and 2 days later, I get a call. Hi, it's Ellen Chenoweth. Bob wants to know if you can come back for the callback. And I was like, who the hell is Bob? And not that I forgot it, but I didn't realize what the hell she was saying. Right. And I really thought it was my cousin pranking me because I had told my cousin what I did.
Right.
And she said, oh, this is you came in for the movie for Robert De Niro's wife. And he saw your tape. He wants to know if you want to come back for the callback. And I said, of course, yes. I went down, and that's when I met you.
Right.
You were there. De Niro was there. And I read that day. And when I auditioned that day, I remember Bob said, well, there's a possible chance we might call you back. By the time I got home from that audition, on my answering machine, when we had answering machines, it says, we want you to come back. I went back and I went back and I went back like so many times, as you know. And then I screen tested and I got the role.
Pretty amazing. Just like, you know, Woody Allen used to say, 85% of success in life is just showing up. And you showed up. You showed up with your son. And then you went, you asked. And then you came back again. They called you. A lot of people just would have forgot about it.
Yeah.
But not you. You just came back. And I remember your tape. I remember when Bob and I kept looking at it.
Oh, wow.
I remember that. And we kept looking at these other actresses who, you know, had some had really good credits. But you had you were the person. You were just so natural. And it was Bob, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think I'm talking out of school here. I think you were Bob's choice from the very beginning. Mine too. It was just, there's nobody who's so authentic like she is. And that was it. And you got the part.
Wow. Well, I think the reason you show up and the reason you do it, and I was just talking to somebody about this.
Right.
And you'll know this is true. There are people that want to be actors, right? They want to be actors. Like, oh, I want to be an actor too.
Right.
And then there were people who didn't decide. It, to me, it's not that you do make a choice that you're going to pursue it, but you are born an actor. You were born with this quality. You were put on this earth and you were born with it. And you know that there is something inside you that you can't help, but you have to do it.
Right.
And you have to do it. And it's the only thing that's going to make you really happy in life. You could get a 9-to-5 job and you can make your living. You could pay your bills or have a really good job or do something really good. But if you were born to be something like an artist, a painter, a singer, an actor, there's always going to be that yearning,
that's
desire.
Right.
And you show up because, not because you want to, because you have to.
You have to.
When you are really meant to be an actor. When you are an actor.
Right. And I always tell people, they say, well, you know, I want to be an actor, but I'm really studying law. And I go, you know what? Forget it. Just stay with, be a lawyer. I said, because if you don't, but I want to be an actor too. I go, you don't understand. This business is so hard.
Yes.
It beats you up so much that you have to say, I have to do this or I'll die.
That's right.
Literally, that's what I was. I didn't make it till I was 40, 39, 40, where no money in the bank, no health insurance, nothing, not married, nothing. And I was, you have to fly, you have to be willing to fly without a net.
That's right.
And that's it.
That's right. And you have to be willing to, and I always say, people get frustrated who are actors and that are trying to do it. And they don't get work and they're not making it. And they start getting bitter and they start getting complaining and they complain about everything and they're not enjoying the process. And I just think to myself, well, I enjoyed doing it for nobody. And I think even if I didn't get this, I really believe this. I would be happy still doing it in a broken down theater, not making it because it's something I have to do.
You have to do
it. I don't want to do it to have an audience or to be famous or anything.
Right.
I have to do it. So it doesn't matter where I do it,
right,
as long as I do it. But if I get work and I can do it and get paid, that's where your vocation meets your calling. And then
absolutely,
you are twice as blessed.
And you're so right, Catherine. And you're not really... To you and to me, we're not really working. It's something, it's fun.
That's right.
I'm playing and I'm having fun.
That's right.
And for those of you who don't, the people out there, I mean, 80% of the world, maybe even more, do jobs that they hate, but they have to do it.
That's right.
And thank God, and I say thank God for them. And like in Bronxdale, the real tough guy is the guy who gets up every day and puts food on the table for his family.
That's right.
Whether it's a man or woman.
That's right.
So what I say is, we're blessed. We are blessed.
I'm so blessed. And I know I'm blessed, and I feel even that's a blessing, knowing that you're blessed and being self-aware and realizing how lucky you are on this planet and how blessed you are. It's a gift.
Right. Now, that was obviously your first big break. What would you say was your second big break right after
the
that?
The second break, I mean, I got things...
Did The Sopranos come how far after that?
Yeah, it was definitely The Sopranos. In 2000.
Right.
So in 2000. So we did we finished, I always remember, I think we finished The Bronx Tale in February of 1993. We finished it. So I was going all those years like Law and Order and this and that. And then when I got The Sopranos, that was a big thing, and I was again blessed with a show like that, and I just always seem to, I want to say it's luck out also, to have myself in a position to be on really beautiful quality movies or TV shows. I feel like it's,
I know, but I mean, luck to me is when, you know, it's a classic line. Luck is inspiration, perspiration and inspiration meet together, meets opportunity. You know, I mean, I know you say you're lucky and I always say I'm lucky, but when you work hard at your craft and you're good, you get hired. I mean, the real key to success, as far as I'm concerned, is be really good at what you do and be well-liked. And you can't fail.
I kind of agree with that because I see a lot of young talent or older talent that I see them working just as hard and showing up, and sometimes they just don't make it. And that's where I call it the luck. That's right. Where I call it the luck. Because right. if you are showing up and you are doing everything that you could, and then I'm showing up and I do everything that I could, and we're both showing up equally and doing the work, the hard work, but I get it. That's when I call it the luck. The other stuff is the work and the dedication and wanting to be there. But the next, there is luck involved because you luck out. You get it. I mean,
right. I always say, it's not, people go, you got to knock on a lot of doors. I say, well, you got to, it's the person who knocks on the most doors the most often. You know, you just keep on trying, man.
That's right.
So how was the Sopranos experience? That was really great.
You know, that was an amazing experience that I'll never forget. Again, I feel so blessed. The people that I worked with were all, you know, a lot of us keep in touch. Some of us don't, but we're all still connected in a special way that,
yes,
like me and you, you'll never lose me. You'll never
right.
get rid of
me. I wouldn't want to, yes.
So we all stay connected, you know. I'm still very good friends with Vinnie Pastore, and yeah. I talk to Drea and, you know, Jamie and Robert Isla, Jamie Lynn Siegler and right. Robert Isla. Johnny V, the guy who played, Ben Tobia, you played
yes.
my husband. Michael Rispoli, Imperioli.
Right.
You know, they're all good people.
Yes, yes, they are. Yeah, and it's a wonderful show.
Thank
I mean,
you.
Great writing. And not to say anything down about, but how was it when you heard James died? That must have hit you hard.
Oh my God, it was like.
Yeah.
It actually felt like somebody told me, you know, a family member died.
Right.
Like, I felt so, so sick. I was so, that's a tremendous loss to everybody.
It is, it
to
is.
Everybody.
He was one of the nicest human beings I've ever met.
So.
And not only just so humble.
Humble.
Oh my God.
Yep. Like, and the most generous.
And the most generous.
Most
now,
generous.
I heard stories. I don't know how true they are. But I said, if that's true, I said, if that's true, that is the most amazing thing I ever heard. Because I never heard of an actor doing that, where he took money off his salary and gave it to.
Yeah.
And that's true.
Yes.
That he gave it to the cast.
Yes, he did.
So they can make more money. I've never met an actor do that.
And you know what he did? Our last season, I think was 2007, we got on stage at the Emmys, and they wanted all of us to take a bow, and because it was the last season.
Right.
And, or was it 2009 or 7? I forgot. But we all fly out to the Emmys, and we get there, and all of a sudden this guy says, security guy or somebody says, come on, all of you, get up and follow us. We were in the shrine. When we go in the back of the shrine, where they have the ceremony, and he says, you know, the reason why we're here is James wants to give you all something. And he goes, we have, and I may be wrong, but I think I'm right. He goes, we have in this duffel bag, they had duffel bags, like $1 million worth of jewelry. Jewelry, watches. And we were like, and he goes, and each one of you are going to get a watch that's inscribed and comes with a, when you get this certificate of
authenticity.
Yeah, authenticity. It's going to have a code and you're all going to get one. And he gave us gold watches. I got a white platinum gold watch, and in the back of it, ironically, it says, rest in peace, Tony.
Wow.
That's what he had engraved in it.
And he bought all those.
He bought everybody a gold watch. Some got, you know, different yeah. watches, but we all got a gold watch.
I mean, I don't know any actor who does that.
Who does that?
Who does that?
He bought everybody on set mopeds.
Moped.
Scooters. Everybody got a scooter, a moped.
Wow.
Yeah. No, one of a kind.
One of a kind.
One of a kind.
And I didn't know him well. I did know him, but I didn't know him well like you guys did. But every time I would meet him, he would just always come over to me. Hey, Chaz, how are you? And we have to work together one day. I'd love to work with you. Just not an heir, you know, not this heir, because he was like an icon.
Really?
You know, and just so nice, and said, I hope one day we can work together. And I was very sad when he passed on.
Yes.
But he will be missed, but you know what? He left a legacy of great work.
That's right.
He really did. And so would you say, and then obviously after The Sopranos, I mean, all the other movies, I mean, so many things you've done. But let's talk about the thing you're doing now with me.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not forget, Catherine and I were in a series called Godfather of Harlem, where she plays Chin Gigante's wife.
Olympia.
And I play Joe Bonanno. We don't have any scenes together.
Well, we can.
Yeah, maybe.
You don't know, we may go out to dinner one night, the four of us.
The four of us. You know what? That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
That's possible.
Me, you, Annabella.
Me, you, Annabella.
And Vincent Zinofrio. I play Vincent Zinofrio's wife.
That's right. You play Vincent. You played some of the biggest stars' wives. Joe Pesci's wife, Robert De Niro's wife.
You know, it was so funny. I played Gandolfini's wife, too, in a film that we did. Michael Rispoli's wife, Michael Imperioli's wife, in a TV series. Bob produced it. De Niro produced it, Jane Rosenthal.
Right.
It was a TV series, like three episodes, I think.
Right.
I forgot the name of it. But I played, oh my God, yeah. I played so many people.
How was it work? I mean, Joe Pesci is so funny. I mean, to work with Joe, right?
You know, I have to tell you, I feel that he, of all the actors that I've ever worked with, surprised me the way he is in real life.
Right.
As opposed to who he is.
Right.
And who he plays.
Right.
And after I met him, I thought, God, I wish there was a film that he can be the lead and really show who he is.
Right.
Because I think it would shock the world on
who he is. He's so funny.
He's funny, but he's also very soft-spoken and gentle.
Gentle, yes.
And you know him a long time,
yes,
right?
Yes, a long, long time. Yeah, but he would be so... I used to, you know, when we did the scene when he comes over to the coffin and, you know, he prays and he speaks to Calogero, young Calogero, and he just, I kept falling asleep because Bob had me in the coffin for 18 hours.
I remember you were in that coffin.
I kept falling asleep and you would hear me snore. And Joe Pesci would just go, hey, what the fuck? You going to wake this guy up or what? Hey, hey. And it was the funniest thing.
Being directed by Martin Scorsese, unbelievable.
Does he talk to the actors a lot, or does he just let you do your thing?
You were never directed by Martin.
I was never been in a Martin Scorsese movie.
This is a crime.
I know, you believe that?
This is a crime.
One of my bucket things, but whatever, for whatever reason.
Wow, it's a crime.
I know.
And the funny thing is, he would love you. Did you ever meet him?
Oh, yes. I met him a bunch of times, yes.
Being directed by him is like being directed by somebody who just is so happy to show up.
Right.
So happy to be there.
Right.
Very chill.
Right.
Loves everyone. Respects everyone.
And gives a nice thing to the set. Makes everybody feel...
I felt I really identified with him in a way where I'm still like that. I still, every time I get a script from The Godfather of Harlem, I text Chris Brancato and I go, thank you. I'm so happy.
Right.
And he must be thinking, well, what's this girl like? What is she? She's doing this a long time. This is what she does.
It doesn't matter.
I'm like a kid.
Again.
I love it. I just love it. And I appreciate going to work and I'm happy.
Right.
And meeting Marty, a person who I see has that same feeling as I do, felt so good to be there. Because you know, a lot of times you'll be on set. People who do it a long time, you feel like they are taking it like, this is another job, no biggie. They're over it.
Right.
They're showing up.
Right.
That's it. They lost their little sparkle in their eye 20 years ago on the last thing they did 20 years ago, and now they're just showing up. I work with a lot of actors sometimes that are like that.
Right.
And when you find people that are still like a kid and still have that sparkle and still have that kid in them that are happy to be there, we're going to make a movie. I love it.
And how is it when you, I know so many people love working with Marty, but when you worked with Clint Eastwood, now that must have been, now how is Clint's approach with actors?
Clint Eastwood, okay, so I worked with Clint Eastwood on Jersey Boys. Clint Eastwood, when I first met Clint Eastwood, this was so funny. I did a self-tape.
For Clint Eastwood?
Yeah, so I didn't meet him yet, and I got hired from the tape.
Right.
So I went to set, it was in LA. I went to set, it was my first day of work, and I got all dressed up into character, and it was a day that I would look really nice because I was going to court, so we had, you know, it was a period piece, so I had this hat on. They made me look really nice, and they took me to set, and I remember being on the golf cart, going from there, and I was on the set. I was like, I can't believe I'm going to meet fucking Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
So I get to the set, and they're all going, all right, Clint's in the car. He'll be here in 5 minutes, Catherine, and I'm like, oh, my God. And then all of a sudden, they're like, Clint's in the elevator. And I look at the elevator. It's going 1, 2, 3, 4. And it goes, ping. So that's how I met Clint Eastwood.
What a great story.
But the one thing he does do, and I can confirm its truth, he doesn't yell action, and he does not yell cut. It's a very zen set.
Yes.
Everybody that works for him, from the DP to the sound, they've all been with him. They know how the machine, the Clint Eastwood machine works.
And he does only a few takes. Boom, boom.
Oh, he does a few takes, but the takes go on forever.
Right.
Like, because he don't yell cut, so me and you were working, we're like, oh, yeah, blah, blah. Now we know the scene's over. And nobody's yelling cut, so I'm like, so what? You improvise until there's nothing left. I mean, there was one time I improvised in a set on a scene, and I felt like it went on for 10 minutes more.
Wow.
And then finally I was just like, I don't have anything else.
Right.
Like, I just stopped.
Right. Wow.
Because nobody ever said cut.
Yeah. I work with Billy, William Friedkin, who's a great director, Billy Friedkin. And he doesn't like to say action because he thinks action makes the actors go action. Just start. Just start.
Was he ever an actor?
You know what? I don't think Billy was.
See, I think that's why Clint does it, because he was an actor.
Yeah.
So I think he knows, like, you know, he's in it and he's out.
He's out.
It's like in the actor's studio. You know, when you start the scene, and they just sit down and they just go whenever you're ready.
Right.
And then you just go and whenever you feel
Catherine
like.
Catherine and I were members of the actor's studio.
Yes, we are proud members of the actor's studio.
Of the actor's studio in New York.
That is a hard thing. How many times did you audition or you got?
I got in, yeah.
You cheated.
Yes,
you cheated. Yeah. I auditioned 3 times.
3 times. Oh, that's pretty good. Geraldine Page auditioned 12 times.
Wow.
Geraldine Page.
Wow.
No, but that was back then. I mean, now, well, it's still hard.
Geraldine Page.
I love Geraldine
Page. Who's your favorite actor?
My favorite actor?
Of all time.
Well, it's, I don't know if I can say my favorite. I got a bunch of favorites. Obviously, Brando. We just saw Brando a couple of nights ago. We saw Streetcar Named Desire again. I haven't seen that in a long time.
Wow.
And I watched it. And you did ever see it?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just really watched it. I was like, damn, holy smokes. It was like, it was incredible.
Incredible.
Incredible. My favorite movie is a lot of big stars' favorite movie. And I think it's Marty's favorite movie, too. And that's On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando, Elie Kazan. Yeah. I think he said that was his favorite movie. I know that's been my favorite movie forever. For those of you who never saw On the Waterfront with Brando, it's pretty amazing. So I would have to say Brando.
Rod Steiger blew me away in that too.
Yes, Rod Steiger was incredible in that. I would say, but now, if it's the people I admired when I was young, obviously when I saw De Niro in Mean Streets, I was like blown away by that. I mean, I was blown. And then to work with Bob, and he played my father, and my real father, Lorenzo. So But then there's some actors who I loved that I can't say who's better than who. My favorite is Peter O'Toole, who I just love. Peter O'Toole. I just thought Peter O'Toole was on another planet. You know, just some great actors, man. Today there's some wonderful actors. I like Denzel a lot. Morgan Freeman.
And who's your favorite actress?
Wow, my favorite. Joan Allen is like, wow. I don't know if you ever saw Joan Allen.
I love Joan Allen.
Joan Allen is...
Know what I loved her in? It was called The Upside of Things with Kevin Costner.
Yes.
She was amazing in that.
The Ice Storm. I mean, pretty...
Yeah.
Pretty amazing actor, actress. Well, of course, Meryl. You got to give Meryl credit, man. Meryl Streep, I mean... She's so great. Every movie she does, she's so great that I think people just take it for granted now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're saying, well, what are we going to do, nominate her 100 times?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's been nominated 20-something times.
She laughs now, I think, when she gets nominated. Like, yeah. She makes jokes and everything.
I mean, she's won I don't know how many times. But I think people just take it for granted now because she's so great.
Right.
You know, they said, all right, let's try to find someone else.
Right.
But she's like... She's on another planet. I mean, I directed some wonderful actresses. Susan Sarandon is, you know, Christine Lattie. Let me tell you something. Another person I directed, absolutely great, Penelope Cruz.
Wow.
Penelope Cruz is the real deal, man. Like, you know, I don't know if people know what a great actor she is. She is really great.
Wow.
You know, it's just, as a director, you just say something to some of these actors and they just do it. You know, they just do it.
Yeah.
And another wonderful actress who I worked with twice is Linda Fiorentino. Now, Linda Fiorentino is just...
Whatever happened to Linda Fiorentino? You know, I want to see her more.
I want to see her more too, but I don't know if she wants to act anymore, but she's...
Amazing actress.
Just an amazing actress, you know. And so many things, you know, so many... You know, I like working with really great people.
How do you like working with Forrest Whitaker and...
Forrest and Vincent
D'Onofrio.
Vincent D'Onofrio. Just, you know, class, man. Yep. Just great actors. Paul Sorvino, too.
Paul Sorvino.
We love working together. We love working together.
I mean, I tell you, when I watch you guys... I was there one day when you all worked, and I was so happy. And
right.
I said, I want to go see, before COVID.
Right.
You know, when you were allowed to go on the set and visit. If you weren't working that day. Actually, I was working that day. And when I finished, I said, what are you doing next? And they said, it's Chaz, Paul Sorvino, Vincent D'Onofrio in the club. And it was the first, I think it was the first season, of course. But the scene you all had in the club where you had a sit down or something.
We had a sit down.
And I remember saying, looking at that on camera going, it's like three icons.
Well, thanks.
Like, really, it was just fabulous to see the three of you like that together. Well, so powerful.
Yeah. Godfather Harlem, I think the first year went great, and this year is going to be even better, they say. And it's a great show.
You know what I find? Here's the differences between good Italian, if you want to say, you know, people who do cliche Italian acting, like, hey, oh, wait, and they think that's how they want to be actors because they have an accent.
Right, right.
I have people that always come up to me. They're like, hey, look at me. Everybody tells me I should be an actor. Oh, hey, oh. And, oh, yeah, that qualifies you.
Right.
Just because you're from the Bronx, Chaz Palminteri, and you have an accent, doesn't mean that's why you're an actor.
Right.
You learned your craft. You know the craft. And the thing is, when people come up to me, you know, people always come up to me, and I'll say it again, like, they're like, yeah, put me to Robert De Niro to put me in a movie. I'll go call him right now for you. Because you have an accent.
Right. You could be in a movie.
And you think you can act.
Well, how about this? They go, oh, you're not acting. You're playing yourself.
Oh.
Well, how about that one?
So I got a great story about that.
Yeah.
So when I got a Bronx Tale, one of my... stories that I remember with me and Bob sitting on the bed in between them tweaking lights. He said, you know, I want to tell you, a lot of people are going to tell you, oh, you only got that role because you're just being you. You're not acting, you're being you.
Right.
He goes, but here's the difference. You're natural. And what that means is, and this is great, I never heard it put this way. He goes, yeah, the difference is that when you go to a wedding and you're all at a wedding and you're all being relaxed and you're like, yeah, the bride and groom, your friends, everybody's enjoying themselves, having drinks. And then the camera guy comes around and he comes to you and he says, hey, say something to the bride and groom. What do? You get up and you're like, hi, and you start acting different.
Right, yes.
You're like, I want to just, and you start putting the show on.
Right.
And you don't act like yourself.
Exactly.
You start acting different. The craft is to be in front of a camera and still act like yourself.
That's right.
That's a craft.
That's a craft.
That's a craft.
It's the hardest, easiest thing you'll ever try.
That's right.
If that makes sense. It looks the
Absolutely.
Easiest, but it's the hardest.
And that's true. And the thing is, the reason why, and going back to the frame of you, Forrest, and Vincent, is this. You and Vincent, two Italian-American actors. He's from Brooklyn. You're from the Bronx. The difference is when people think that they could act because they have an accent, they want to like just come right off the street and onto a set. It's not that. That is such a craft to act like, even though you have the accent, it takes a long time to really know the craft and do what you're doing so
right.
well. And that's why there's bad movies that portray Italian gangsters. And that's why The Godfather with Pacino and
right.
De Niro and
Bronx Tale.
A Bronx Tale with you and De Niro. And these are trained actors. And that's why they become classic, great Italian, you know, if you want to call them gangster flicks. And along with The Sopranos,
right.
everybody knew their craft. It's not like some of the shows that come and go and they fail because they hire an American guy to come on and
right.
try to do a bad imitation
right.
of an Italian, what they think, the idea
right.
of what an Italian gangster would be. The A.O.
We had my friend Dominic Broccoli. He was playing the owner of Geno's. Now, he owned Geno's.
His last name is Broccoli?
His last name is Broccoli, like the vegetable.
My doctor was Broccoli when I was a kid.
Oh, really?
In Harlem.
There you go. A lot of broccolis. Okay, so now he's playing himself. He owns the restaurant. All he had to do was say the lines he always says. So we gave him the lines, and he comes out, and Bob says, all right, let's do it. He comes out, and he goes like this to me. He goes, Sonny, do you want some broccoli da or some frutta da ma? And we're like, what the fuck? No, all right, that's it. I mean, he couldn't do it because he thought he had to just act. And you don't have to act. That's the idea. Don't act. And so that's why.
But don't act doesn't mean don't act.
Right. Don't act means be you, but real you.
You listen, it takes a long time to get what the hell it means.
Right, that's
when
true.
I was in the actor's studio, I remember... when I was in the actor's studio, I remember I was doing a scene and Estelle Parzin said... what the hell did she say? I forgot what she said about... she said, what are you doing? I said, well, I was trying to find the character. She goes, well, what do you mean you're trying to find the character? You're the character. I go, yeah, but I mean, I'm not going to be me while I'm doing it. She goes, why wouldn't you be you? And it became a back and forth thing. And I couldn't understand what she was saying. She made 100% sense.
Right.
And then it took me about 5 years being a member of the studio until one day I got up and I did something. And every single thing she said connected in my brain.
It takes years to know how to like go up on a line and then realize where you are and just take a breath and come right back again.
That's right.
But you'll see it's not as easy as you think it is. And it's, you know, and it's just the rejection is, please.
Right.
The rejection is just like, I always told parents, they tell me, please, Chaz, talk to my daughter, my son. He wants to be an actor. Please talk him out of it. I know what I say to them, Catherine. I say, listen, the business is so tough that don't worry. If they don't have it in them, they'll quit because they're going to get beat up so bad and rejected so bad that they don't need their parents not to be on their side. I said, be on their side. Wish them well. Be an oasis for them to go to.
Wow.
I said, don't worry. If they don't have it here, they'll stop.
That's right.
And you know what? And I said, because only two things could happen, and they're both bad. One, they won't make it, and they'll resent you. Or two,
That's right.
They will make it and they'll resent you.
That's right, if you don't support them.
Right.
What a great analogy. I like that. You know, and the other thing is, too, when I taught two semesters at the School of Visual Arts. I taught first-year directors. They had to take a course in acting.
Yes.
And the first thing I asked the whole entire class is, but no, I'm lying right now. Wait. Yes, I had to teach first-year directors how to act. But then at the end of the class, at the end of the whole thing, they all learned how to act. And then they started saying to me, oh, I think I want to switch. I want to act now. Like a lot of them were like,
really?
They didn't have to be. They could do whatever they want. Right. Next semester, change it. But they were there to learn how to be directors. And at the end, I said to them, if you feel like you will die if you don't act, then, because that school is, the school is like $40,000 a year.
Yes.
And I said, if you feel like you're going to die, if you're not going to be an actor, then yes, go take the acting course. But don't waste your parents' money if you're not going to be, don't want to be an actor, and you're not going to be able to take, like you said, all the rejection, and that's all you want to do. I don't even look at it as rejection. I don't even use the word. That's so negative to think you were rejected.
Right. Many times, I'm on the other side of the camera a lot. Many times the best actor doesn't get the part. That's the one who's right for it.
That's right.
So you walk out of there thinking, I must not be good, but meanwhile, you gave the best audition. You're just not right for it.
Exactly.
So you forget about it.
Right. But then actors think, well, why did they call me in if I wasn't? They saw my resume. They knew who I am.
Yeah.
Why did they call me in? So they're not thinking that it was, they just weren't right for it. Stunk up the room.
Right. Catherine, I went to, years ago, way before Bronx Tale, I went to the network. It was between me and this other guy. And I went to the network and we shot whoever, this was the last two guys. And I didn't get the part. And I said, how could that be? I was so much more right for it than the other guy. I really knew I was right for this.
Right.
And I just forgot about it. And then years later, I ran into one of the producers in LA. I said, hey, how you doing? He goes, hey, Chaz, how are you? We're talking. And he goes, I gotta tell you something. Remember that pilot that we did, you know? I go, yeah. He said, you were the best guy. I said, oh, well, thanks. I said, well, the other guy got it. He goes, you know why you didn't get it? I said, I don't know. I don't know why. I go, it's a few years ago. It's no big deal. He goes, the head executive producer said that I was a guy who reminded him of the guy that stole his wife.
Wow.
So I didn't get the part for that reason.
Yeah.
Said every time I look at him, he looks just like the guy that when my wife left me for. And I didn't get the part. So I always tell actors, you never know why you're never going to get a part, so don't worry about it.
Wow, that's original.
Yeah. So it was really great being here with you, going over your whole career. And
Thank you. And
could you talk about that new thing, or maybe you shouldn't?
I can't.
You can't talk about that, okay. But you'll be seeing in a very, very big series, but we can't talk about it now.
Yeah, it's a secret.
It's a secret. We can't talk about it. So, Catherine, how long have you been painting?
So I've been painting since, I want to say, 93.
So is this something, this seems like something you just have to do?
This is also something that's out of my control.
Out of your control.
It's out of my control.
Wow. Now, this painting here, what would you say? Is there a name for that painting?
I don't have a name for it, but it goes with the series of all these women that I had a big show in Brooklyn and her in back of you.
Yes.
All these women. So there is a kind of a theme behind it, is that, you know, I feel that women in where we are now with all this body dysmorphia and all this shit, people come in. And they come to the gallery or they come in my studio and they go, oh my God, these are so beautiful. And I say, oh yeah, you think she's beautiful? You think this is beautiful? And they go, I think she's so beautiful. And these are women who are, some women that are insecure and don't think they're beautiful.
Right.
And they have body issues and they use filters or whatever. And I'm saying to myself, this same girl who has issues with that, comes in and he looks at this and goes, she's beautiful, she's beautiful, she's beautiful. But they don't see the beauty in themselves.
Right.
And for me, so I just did it to say, because people look at it and they like them. They're like, they're beautiful. I love them. And they're not perfect.
Right.
But we think they're beautiful. We think this, you know, we think it's beautiful.
Right.
And, you know, one boob is bigger than the other. Who's heavy? Who's, you know, big nose? I purposely made them like that because I wanted to show the point of when you look at art and you may think it's beautiful, but then you look at yourself and you go, well, why wouldn't I be beautiful? I'm far more in proportion than these pieces. Right. Well, so that's where the idea of it
came
from.
I get it. I get it.
And it was called The Gathering.
The Gathering. Nice. Nice. Now, do you ever get commissioned to, like, paint someone? They ever come to you and say...
Yeah, I just got... I did a series in these old books. I was painting... portraits in these old books.
Right.
And I just sent one out to California. I just sent one out of this guy.
He's great.
Wanted me to do him. He sent me the Jane Austen book. It's his favorite, Jane Rye.
Right.
And that's his favorite novel. And he sent it to me. And he said, will you put my portrait on a page, pick a page. And I did it. And he put it in on plexiglass. And it's on his coffee table with it open. To the portrait, you know, his favorite book with his portrait in it.
So many people, I think De Niro bought one of your paintings, right?
Yeah.
I bought one, The Usual Suspects painting.
Yes.
So.
And I gave Marty a sculpture.
For people who want to look at your paintings and maybe purchase them, how do they go about doing that?
Well, they could go on Instagram.
Yes.
On Catherine Narducci Artist. Just like that, Catherine Narducci Artist.
Right.
And
they could do it that way.
And they could DM it and see my art there.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's really, really great. Well, Catherine, it's been a great time. Thank you. So really, look, I'm acting up. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you too.
No, seriously, thank you so much for being my first guest on my podcast.
Yes.
And I think it was just so insightful to hear about your life and your career and your paintings. And again, if somebody wants to look at your paintings, they go to Instagram.
Catherine Narducci Artist.
Artist. And you're going to be seeing her and I in Godfather of Harlem this year.
We got to convince Chris Brancato to have the
a scene.
Bananos and the Gigantes go out to
the
dinner.
The Bananos and the Gigantes.
We got to go to the Copa.
Know what? I think that'd be a great idea.
Right?
Yes. They'll have to do the Copa over again. That'd be great.
That would be great. Or was the Copa around?
Yes. Are you kidding? Copa was at the height at that time.
Oh, wow.
In the 60s? Oh, my God. Copa was at the height.
Was it in the 50s? We're in the 50s.
We're in the 50s and 60s. Copa was the height.
Wow.
When you played the Copa and you went to the Copa? Wow.
Well, we could go up to Harlem and see some jazz.
Oh, go to Harlem, the Cotton Club.
That would be unbelievable.
That would be great. That would be great.
Okay. We got to make it happen.
We'll make it happen. God bless.